Hello and welcome to this podcast focusing on TROP2 targeting antibody drug conjugates for triple-negative breast cancer. In this episode, which covers the content from a recent online BURST CME program, Drs. Virginia Kaklamani and Tiffany Traina discuss the rationale for antibody drug conjugate and immune checkpoint inhibitor combinations in triple-negative breast cancer. This activity is provided by PER and supported by an educational grant from Gilead Sciences, Inc.
Hello and welcome to BURST CME, Establishing the Rationale for ADC and ICI Combinations in Triple-Negative Breast Cancer. On behalf of Physicians Education Resource, thank you for joining us. I'm Tiffany Traina, Associate Attending Physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and Section Head of our Triple-Negative Breast Cancer Clinical Research Program. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Kaklamani. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Tiffany. So I'm Virginia Kaklamani, Professor of Medicine at UT Health in San Antonio. I'm head of the breast program here.
Terrific. Thanks so much. So during this program, we'll discuss the current and emerging therapeutic strategies for the management of triple-negative breast cancer, really focusing our discussion on the rationale for combining TROP2-targeted ADCs with immune checkpoint inhibitors in the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer. And we're going to include an animation that's a didactic tool that'll help to illustrate the mechanistic rationale for why we might combine these therapies in triple-negative breast cancer management. There'll be a panel-style discussion and an interactive discussion between the two of us to help provide some insight into integrating these strategies into our clinical practice. So let's get started. I'd like to just start with highlighting some key data to anchor the discussion to come. So we're going to first just begin on exploring some novel approaches to leveraging TROP2 ADCs in triple-negative breast cancer. And I wanted to start with a bit of a placemat on the algorithm per guidelines and how we approach metastatic triple-negative breast cancer for our patients that's really biomarker-driven. And you'll see what's really critically important first is knowing the PD-L1 status of the tumor, as well as knowing the germline BRCA mutation status for our patients. And I'll just draw your attention to the left side of the slide. In those tumors that are PD-L1 positive, combination pembrolizumab with first-line chemotherapy is really the standard of care. When tumors are PD-L1 negative, then in the absence of a germline BRCA mutation, we're generally leading with first-line chemotherapy. And for those patients who do have a germline BRCA mutation, PARP inhibitors or platinum-based therapy is preferred. I'm really going to focus much of our discussion here on the first-line setting and draw your attention to the fact that this paradigm may be changing very soon, as we've seen the data from ASCENT-04, which was a first-line trial in PD-L1 positive tumors that were triple negative. And then we'll talk about that a bit more in the time to come. So we have several different antibody drug conjugates right now for the treatment of advanced breast cancer. We'll start with chatting about sacituzumab govitecan, which was the first anti-TROP2 targeted ADC that we had, a drug to antibody ratio of almost 8-1, a cleavable linker that has a payload that is a topo-1 inhibitor and a metabolite of irinotecan. And this payload is one that is membrane permeable and perhaps contributing to some bystander effect. We've also seen data for Dato-DXd. This is another TROP2 targeted antibody drug conjugate, a slightly different drug to antibody ratio of 4-1. This also has a cleavable linker, a different payload, although also a topo-1 inhibitor. It is deruxtecan as the payload, and this also is membrane permeable. We just recently saw some data from a randomized trial of sacituzumab TMT. This is the third TROP2 ADC that we have seen data on. It also has a cleavable linker. It also has a topo-1 inhibitor payload that also is membrane permeable. And the last ADC I want to mention in this discussion that we'll talk about a bit more is trastuzumab deruxtecan. So here the target is HER2. We've been quite familiar with this in the management of HER2 positive breast cancer and now also HER2 low breast cancer. This similarly has a cleavable linker. It has that topo-1 inhibitor of deruxtecan, which we know is membrane permeable. So these are the four that we really have as top of mind as we start to approach patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer. I want to remind you about the ASCENT trial. This is what led to the FDA approval of sacituzumab govitecan for advanced metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. Compared to standard of care chemotherapy, progression-free survival was significantly superior with the use of sacituzumab govitecan, with about a 70% improvement there, or 60% improvement in PFS, but also really meaningfully about a 50% improvement in overall survival, with median OS of 12 months as opposed to about 6.5 months for patients who had seen multiple lines of chemotherapy for their advanced TNBC. So, what is the rationale for combining TROP2 ADCs with immune checkpoint inhibitors? I'm going to just introduce an animation that may bring that description to life, and then I'll turn things over to Dr. Kaklamani.
The antibody drug conjugate, or ADC, binds to its tumor cell target protein. Upon internalization, the ADC payload is then released into the tumor cell. The ADC payload, which is often a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor, induces DNA damage. The damaged DNA is exported to the cytoplasm, where it triggers cGAS to produce cyclic GMP-AMP, or cGAMP. Secreted cGAMP triggers extracellular interferon signaling. Intracellular cGAMP dimerizes the stimulator of interferon genes, or STING, which then associates with TBK1, leading to phosphorylation and dimerization of IRF3. Phospho-IRF3 dimers enter the nucleus and promote interferon expression. Interferons upregulate pro-survival factors, prolong storage of apoptotic material, and localize MHC class I molecules to storage compartments in dendritic cells. Dendritic cells present tumor-associated antigens to T cells. PD-1 and PD-L1 immune checkpoint inhibitors, such as pembrolizumab and durvalumab, block tumor cell PD-L1 binding to T cell PD-1, allowing the T cell to exert effect against the cancer cell. In summary, ADC-mediated tumor cell DNA damage activates the STING pathway, which stimulates the production of type I interferons. Type I interferons then activate dendritic cells to present tumor-associated antigens to T cells that have become activated following the removal of PD-1 interaction with PD-L1 by an immune checkpoint inhibitor. The synergy between different ADCs and immune checkpoint inhibitors is being studied in the ASCENT-04, TROPION-Breast05, TroFuse-11, and BEGONIA studies of advanced triple-negative breast cancer.
Well, thanks, Dr. Trina. So one of the big studies that came out of ASCO was the ASCENT-04 trial, and this was a first-line trial that looked at the combination of sacituzumab govitecan plus pembrolizumab versus chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab in patients that had metastatic TNBC that was PD-L1 positive. And the trial met its primary endpoint, which was progression-free survival, showing a significant improvement. And you can see here, not just statistically significant, but also I think clinically meaningful. Tiffany, when you look at these results, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm always happy to see separation of the curves here with, ASCENT-04 and sacituzumab looking superior in terms of PFS to traditional chemotherapy, pembrolizumab, and that's an impressive clinically meaningful difference.
Yeah, I agree too. Interestingly, the trial allowed for a crossover, so the patients that were not randomized to receive sacituzumab could have received it at disease progression, and so the overall survival results are going to be taken with a grain of salt, knowing that many of the patients crossed over. And these are premature results, but you can see here that there is a change that's pointing toward the benefit from sacituzumab, not statistically significant. The maturity rate is only 26%, but obviously nice to see these curves as well.
For
And as
sure.
far as adverse events, it was pretty much what we expect from the combination of these agents. There was no additive toxicity. There was some cytopenia that we see with sacituzumab as well as diarrhea. AEs were at expected rates based on the drugs that the patients were on. Now there's a companion study, ASCENT-03, very similar in design, but this is in patients that had PD-L1 negative tumors. So sacituzumab compared to treatment of physician's choice chemotherapy in that first line setting. We don't have the results, but we do have a press release that also shows that there is that the trial is positive, a progression-free survival benefit in this first-line metastatic TNBC, and the results will be presented at an upcoming meeting. And Tiffany, assuming that these results are relatively similar to what we saw with ASCENT-03, how do you see sacituzumab being incorporated in metastatic TNBC?
I think that both of these trials complement one another nicely, and it really makes it somewhat easier for clinicians to recognize that the ADC is superior to chemo, regardless of PD-L1 status. You could really begin treating your patient with sacituzumab in the first line setting and then add pembrolizumab when that PD-L1 result comes back positive. I think it's really nice to see that we have this as options for all of our first line TNBC patients.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think these trials really are pointing to the same direction, which is always great to see. Now there is an incorporation, potential incorporation of sacituzumab in the adjuvant setting in patients that have a higher risk of recurrence based on the fact that they did not achieve a pathologic complete response with neoadjuvant chemotherapy. So we have ASCENT-05 and SASIA. And so here we have sacituzumab with or without pembrolizumab versus treatment of physician's choice. These are ongoing trials, so it's going to take a little while to get results. But assuming that we see the same trend that we're seeing in the metastatic setting where these ADCs are outperforming chemotherapy, we may have very soon a different standard of care therapy in the adjuvant setting as well. And as Tiffany mentioned earlier, we cannot forget T-DXd. There's data with T-DXd from DESTINY-Breast04 in a subset of patients that have triple-negative breast cancer. Small number of patients, 58, that were included in this TNBC HER2-low breast cancer, but there was a difference that was, I think, pretty impressive with a median PFS as well as overall survival, pointing to the superiority of T-DXd in patients with triple negative HER2 low breast cancer. Now, as far as the other ADCs, there's some preliminary data. The Begonia trial was a smaller phase two trial with several arms, including an arm looking at Dato-DXd and durvalumab. And you can see here a nice tumor response and again activity in this setting. There was also an arm looking at T-DXd, and so Begonia really gave us an initial signal that whether we're giving Dato-DXd or T-DXd in patients, we're seeing a nice response that I think is likely going to translate into the larger trials being positive as well.
You know what I think was nice, if I can interrupt, about the Begonia data that you just showed with Dato and Durva. We always have this concern about pneumonitis from immune checkpoint inhibitors. And as we know, T-DXd has a description of ILD and pneumonitis as one of its toxicities. So to see here this really impressive waterfall plot, almost regardless of PD-L1 status and a very low rate of ILD and pneumonitis for the combination with Dato, I think was reassuring, thinking that might be a practical combination.
Extremely important. I think you're absolutely right. The pneumonitis rate of only 5% and all of them grade one or two it is very reassuring.
So thinking about that combination of Dato and Durva, as shown here, with a nice safety profile, that's being explored actually as a combination in TROPION-Breast05, excuse me, which will look at Dato-Durva in combination versus standard of care first line PD-L1 positive metastatic triple-negative breast cancer combination with immune checkpoint inhibitor and chemotherapy. So yet another trial that'll help to show what I suspect will be the superiority of ADC immune checkpoint inhibitor combinations in that space.
So, obviously, we don't have all of these results yet. We have ASCENT-04. We have a press release for ASCENT-03. So, if you had to revisit the initial treatment landscape that you presented, how would you change that based on this data?
Yeah, terrific question. So, I think that it really is compelling evidence to move up sacituzumab with pembrolizumab in that first line setting for PD-L1 positive tumors. And again, we'll see the data eventually for the PD-L1 negatives, but as the press release suggests, SASE single agent was better than chemotherapy single agent. So I think we similarly have that in the space of PD-L1 negative first line metastatic triple negative breast cancer. We have seen overall survival with SASE from ASCENT in later line. And I really want to come back to what you shared about crossover being allowed in ASCENT-04. I think that was incredibly generous and really important for our patients to come on to study, knowing that even if they were randomized to the control arm, they would get access to sacituzumab and have that ability to cross over. But the downside is that we potentially risk not seeing an overall survival advantage in the trial in the first line setting. So we really need to be cautious about, not necessarily concluding there's no survival advantage, but it might just be a result of the way the trial was designed to be very generous to the patients.
And we all struggle with that because our holy grail is overall survival, and we want to see that obviously. But and we will always say, well, how about if I give it a second look? And in some cases, maybe we can, but I would suggest that TNBC may not be the right setting to do this. We know that we lose patients between lines of therapy. And in ER-positive disease, that's probably 10 to 15%. In HER2-positive disease, maybe 15 to 20%. But in triple-negative, it goes higher, 25 to 30%. And so am I sure that I have the patient in front of me that is going to go to second line? Or am I concerned that maybe if there's disease progression, their performance status deteriorates and they may not get to that second line and not receive sacituzumab, which obviously we can see here the benefit in PFS. So I think at least the way I interpret the results is that regardless of the OS, I'd still want to give sacituzumab early in.
Yeah, I think that was just beautifully summarized. The other thing to call out is in ASCENT-04, they allowed for a very short disease-free interval for those real rapid progressors after neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy of 6 months. And so, we've all seen these patients in our clinics that have such rapidly progressive, really refractory disease. And I agree 100% that those folks might just get one chance at first line, at a first line therapy, and you want to use the best drugs that we've got available to us.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we still don't know much about the biology post KEYNOTE-522 of how these triple negative tumors are evolving and becoming metastatic. So good to have that data.
Definitely.
So this has been extremely informative. Before we end this discussion, I'd like to get some final thoughts. Tiffany, your summary
Yeah.
of the landscape, the treatment landscape in TNBC, how it's evolved.
Sure. I mean, in a nutshell, I think the ADCs are just incredibly powerful. Thrilled that we've seen data from ASCENT-04 showing sacituzumab and checkpoint inhibitor in the first line setting being superior. And I hope to see that we continue to move these up, all the emerging data ahead. I'm hopeful for our patients with TNBC.
And to me, a couple of unmet needs. Number one, other powerful ADCs that are not topo one inhibitors. We haven't talked about crossover because we're still waiting for better data, but it's hard to treat patients with the exact or similar payload over and over again and expect good results. And number two, biomarkers. We need a biomarker to try to figure out which is the right ADC, especially since we have three or four that might be available. So I want to thank you all for joining us and hope that you found this discussion useful and informative for your practice.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.